Welcome to Stories from the Wall, a podcast of the National Memorial for the Unborn. For those of you who are not familiar with the National Memorial for the Unborn, it's a ministry that was begun to honor children who are lost to abortion and to heal the pain associated with that loss. And on this podcast, we are joined by Rachel Moore, and we're going to hear Rachel's story. Welcome to the podcast, Rachel.
Thank you.
So we're going to start at the very beginning. So I want you to tell us, in your own words, what was going on at the time of your abortion and all of the things that you believe that we need to know in order for us to understand and so that we can help others not go down this path. So,
sure. The year I had my abortion was the same year I graduated high school. It was actually the day after I turned 19. Of course, I was really young. Nowhere did I have marriage in my future. I felt like I didn't have the support system that I would need. I felt alone and scared. And so at the time, I believed what a lot of women believe is that it's just a clump of cells. It's just, you know, it's fine, you know, and I don't know when I would have thought it was a baby, but of course I was in denial. Mm-hmm. So I said, well, this is just the easiest thing to do to cover my sin.
Sure.
So my boyfriend and I made the decision at that time to actually drive to Atlanta. We didn't want anybody to see us anywhere near our town. Mm-hmm. So we drove out of town and had that done at that time. So that's kind of the situation. I didn't have the support I felt like I needed.
Sure. So was your boyfriend, did he go into the clinic with you, or did he just drive you there, and did he pay for it? All those other things, because a lot of people don't have the same kind of story. So,
yeah. No, we drove together, and he paid for it. Mm-hmm. And at the time, what he did is he had gone to his boss, and he had asked for an advance, and so he got his paycheck a little early. And I believe he told the boss what was going on and why he needed it.
Oh, wow.
And he did go in with me, and as far as I remember, he was quite nervous about it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he really felt 100% on it or if he was just as scared as I was. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so he was there with me.
Okay. So tell us about that experience in the clinic.
So actually we went there twice, and from my memory, because this happened almost 25 years ago. It was mm-hmm. a long time ago. But from my memory is I know we went there twice, and I think it was because like there was, kind of like different price brackets for the abortion as opposed to like how far along you were.
Okay.
And I think I was kind of like in between when we went the first time. And so it seemed like we didn't quite have the money. So we went back and we waited to the next appointed time and got the extra money and then went okay. back. So I was even a little bit more further along.
Okay. Do you know how far along were you?
I was 14 weeks.
Okay.
So, and I did research about what the different procedures were mm-hmm. For that term, and I knew that I didn't want to have a memory of it, the actual procedure. So the option was to be put under general anesthesia, mm-hmm. and so I did have that done. And I thought, oh, well, that you know, that's going to make it even easier, so I can move on with my life. But
right.
but God had other plans. So
sure, yes. So after the abortion, and you're back home, what's going on in your head?
At first, it just I honestly I felt relieved. Mm-hmm. I even we were driving my car, and it's a little bit of a control freak, and I didn't like how he was driving my car. And about halfway home, I told him, pull over, I'm going to drive, you're making me nervous. And so, I mean, I had all this energy, and I felt relieved, and I felt like it was behind me. Mm-hmm. But looking back on it, I was really medicating with drugs and alcohol and just partying with my friends and mm-hmm. just being lost.
So when did you get to a point where you recognized that this was something that was affecting you?
A lot later. So my grandmother and grandfather, they raised me. Mm-hmm. And so my grandfather was the father figure for me in my life. And they were the picture of marriage for me, and they were the picture of stability. And I know God put that in my life to look back on and have an influence, because once I was in my late 20s, my grandfather came down with a terminal illness, and it broke my heart. Like, I grew up in church, and he was just a great man. Like, I never saw him fight with my grandmother, and I mean, he was the picture of what I would probably want had I ever wanted to be married. Mm-hmm. So once he came down with his terminal illness, I watched him, slowly fade away. And once he did pass away, at that time, I knew he was in heaven. Mm-hmm. But before that, I was more of an agnostic in my early adult years. But that kind of solidified, okay, I know what side of the fence I'm on. And I was alone in my room, I think it was even before the funeral, and I just felt so convicted, and I gave my life to Jesus mm-hmm. at that time. So that's kind of what opened the door to start softening my heart, if you will.
Sure.
And then sometime later, I met my husband. We got married. We struggled for a while with children, and I think God did that too on purpose, because he made me really, really want children, because mm-hmm. it didn't come easy.
Right.
And then once I did get pregnant with my first child, and I would start remembering, okay, this is how far I was along back then, and there's just little bits of memory, and then there was conviction and guilt, and it just built and built and built.
Sure.
And then after I had my son, they're 26 months apart, my husband and I had started having some issues in our marriage, and I was like, I think it's my anxiety. I have too much control, and I need to learn how to relax and, give you the lead, and so let me go get therapy. And it was just general anxiety therapy. And during those talks one day, I brought up the abortion. And I never show my emotion. I don't feel comfortable showing people my emotion. But that mm-hmm. day when I drove home, I could not stop crying.
Right.
Couldn't stop. And I was like, there's something more to this. And I need help specifically for this issue. And I looked up in Google, and I knew I needed something that was Christ-centered, and I found Abortion Recovery Alabama, and I was like, that's my place. And I got in contact with the leader of that and got into a group and started my healing journey.
Sure. So how long was the journey?
It's a 12-week program.
Okay. Do you remember any specific curriculum that you used, or?
Yes. I don't remember the author, but the book we used was Forgiven and Set Free.
Yeah. Yes.
So that's what we used, and I learned that I was forgiven and set free. And like a lot of women, we go in and we know intellectually, okay, God, I know God has forgiven me, but in the heart, at first you just don't feel it, mm-hmm. So they put us through the Bible study, and they have us read scripture, and that forgiveness chapter was really where, things started coming off as far as
That guilt and that shame and all of that, yeah.
Yes, and also for people that I put in that little bucket of, well, if it weren't for that person or that person, I wouldn't have done it. And,
right.
You know, and so that's when I learned, you know, God forgave me not just for the little sin. He gave me for all my sins, not just some, not the ones I picked, but all of them. And I should have joy. And the people that I've blamed, that I said, if this hadn't happened, I wouldn't have been here. They're sinners just like me.
Right.
And that was, that realization was so empowering and set me, it really did set me free to be able to forgive those that I had put in that blame bucket.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, was your husband aware of your abortion when you got married or?
Yes. Okay. Yes, he did. Of course, I told him about that. And so he was supportive of me going through the program. Mm-hmm. And he's supportive of me being here today.
So. Sure. So tell us about how you found out about the National Memorial for the Unborn.
It was through ARA.
Okay.
So at the end of once we complete the program, they would give us some other resources. And one of those was the National Memorial for the Unborn. And I thought, well, one of the chapters was about, I think, like the last one is where we give a memorial to a child, and we ask God to help us figure out what, if it was a boy or a girl, and their name and everything, and then we have a memorial. So I wanted to go beyond that program and put my son's name out there on the wall. So.
Now, have you had any contact with the child's father since that abortion?
No, I have not. And it's not that I have anger towards him or anything like that. I was just advised to leave it be. 'Cause I did want to, when I was going through the program, I did want to contact him and see how he was doing.
Sure.
But, they said, maybe not while you're trying to heal. Maybe we need to leave that alone. And so I haven't contacted him.
Sure. So now you have two healthy, wonderful children.
Yeah.
And you're enjoying them as well. And, I mean, when you watch them growing and changing, because one of the things that I remember after I had my abortion was, you know, all of those milestones in their life would, you know, remind me of the one that I wasn't raising. And so how do you deal with that?
It is, of course, it's sad, and I wish it wasn't so. But my children, they do know that they have two in heaven, one from the experience I'm talking about today and another through a topic that we had that was affecting. It could have killed me too.
Sure.
They are aware that they have two in heaven that are waiting on them one day.
That's amazing.
But it was weird because this week, my oldest, she never has asked about my son. Mm-hmm. And she's always just talked about her sister in heaven. Well, this week she said, well, what happened to Jacob? And she's five. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, I'm not going to lie to her, but I'm not going to tell her. You know, I just told her I was very, very, very young. And one day I'll tell you the circumstances.
Sure. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Children are very perceptive, I'm finding, even at that young stage of development. And so they're curious and they want to know. I did not share that information with my child until she was 13. And it was quite, but it was, I mean, there were some things that led up to that so that she understood that, you know, she had a sibling in heaven. And in fact, God had used her in a way to help me heal. And she had no memory of, but God had given her dreams about her sibling, And she was not aware of that until later, because she had no memory of them. But I wrote down everything that she told me from the dreams. So she was able to read the journal entries and know that God used her to help me to heal. So, and your children are going to be in the same situation one day, and they're going to understand that, you know, this is a part of your life, not the part that you're jumping up and down about, but you're looking forward to seeing Jacob in heaven and your other daughter, you said?
My daughter, yes.
Yeah. So that's amazing. Well, I want to thank you so much for being vulnerable and sharing with us your story. We love the idea of those who have those nameplates on the wall honoring their children to be able to share their stories, because they're all so different. And we really appreciate your vulnerability and your openness and your honesty about everything. Thank you so much for joining us, Rachel.
Thank you so much.
And thank you guys for joining us as well. If you have a story because you have a nameplate on the wall at the National Memorial for the Unborn, we would love for you to share that story with us. And you can contact us at our email address, office@memorialfortheunborn.org. Again, that's office@memorialfortheunborn.org. We would love to have you share your story with us. Thank you so much for joining us.